according to new numbers released this week, poverty in Wisconsin has gone down a bit since the Great Recession, but still hasn't returned to pre-crash levels. We talked to that report's author yesterday on the show.
Now we take a closer look at families and parents in poverty. Our next guest has studied poverty and families living in poverty for years with a focus on low-income parents. And along the way, she has tried to correct public misperceptions about those parents.
Catherine Eden is with us now. She is a professor of sociology at Johns Hopkins University. Her books include Promises I Can Keep, Why Poor Women Put Motherhood Before Marriage. And most recently, she's the co-author of Doing the Best I Can, Fathering in the Inner City. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, a lot of sociologists study things like poverty through the lens of statistics and surveys. They don't always sort of live with the people they're researching. But you did that. You lived in the inner city neighborhoods in Camden, New Jersey for 3 years. Why was that important to you?
Well, at the time we started the study, you know, there were all kinds of explanations for the spread of single parenthood. And none of them really held up to the statistical test. So single parenthood, as one of my colleagues said, was the biggest demographic mystery of the last half of the 20th century. And we thought that if we were going to, you know, get the answer right after other folks had struggled to do that, that we really needed to sort of take the extra step and move into a community where rates of single parenthood were high and see for ourselves what the dynamics of this community was like.
Well, when we hear a lot of the conversation, the national conversation about poverty, you know, we hear the phrase deadbeat dads, for one, and we hear about the rise of single mothers and the disintegration of the family. What did you reposition in your mind when you thought about those things from your new perspective?
Well, you know, I think what we used to think is that we had either stable two-parent families or we had single moms. And if you look at the demographic data, I mean, our ethnographic research revealed this, and then we were able to see documentation in representative, nationally representative data. What we find is that there really are no single mothers or very few single mothers, at least among women who give birth non-maritally. Instead, what you see is very complex families, mothers and fathers churning through partners. It's almost as if they're dating, you know, just like college students are, but they're having children along the way. So the typical child in a single-parent family, first of all, is typically born to two parents who are together romantically. But then over the course of time, these children end up on a family go-round, you know, experiencing a number of different parent transitions. You know, new men come into their mother's lives, new women come into their father's lives, and new siblings come in through both of those channels, creating very complex families.
And what is the effect of that on the children?
Well, the evidence is just coming in. You know, we sort of just discovered, you know, this sort of demographic reality. And from what we can tell, you know, children are resilient. We know that children of divorce, for example, can recover after a year or two. But what's going on with non-marital children often, and, you know, in the United States, having children out of marriage is almost completely a phenomenon among the least educated and the least advantaged Americans. So we have to keep that in mind. The transitions happen so quickly that children can't recover. And what we're seeing is that children are not doing well, especially boys.
Well, when we talk about boys, we often, you know, look to the father, and looking at the fathers has been something that society's been doing for a while, saying, you know, these dads are not involved in the kids' life, and that seems to be part of the problem in poverty-stricken neighborhoods. What do you hear when you talk to low-income fathers in Camden, New Jersey, in some of these poor neighborhoods?
Yeah, well, what we hear, we studied low-income dads in 23 neighborhoods across Camden and Philadelphia, and both black and white fathers. There are not a lot of Latinos in Philadelphia. And what we heard was very striking. First of all, there is a tremendous desire to father, to be a father, and not just to take on the status, but to really engage in the role. So we know now from representative data that, 98% of fathers arrive at the hospital when their baby is born, really wanted to be involved with that child. 80% of the time, they're in a romantic relationship with the mother. 75% of the time, they say, hey, there's a good chance we're going to stay together and even get married. So men have these high hopes, even these disadvantaged men, for really fathering their children. And what's really attracting them, I guess the irony to the story is, what's really attracting them to the relationship is actually the child. So in the old days, you know, in the 50s, right, men sort of had to be tied to their children through their relationship to their partner. But the partner relationship was really central, and the father-child relationship was more peripheral. For the men we studied, it was really the father-child relationship they saw as central. So when confronted with a surprise pregnancy, and most of these pregnancies were accidental, rather than cutting and running, they often rejoiced in the fact and really tried to get it together with the mother of their child in order to form a family-like relationship so they could stay involved.
So what you're saying kind of turns on its head common assumptions about poor dads and the role that they play in the family and in these city areas that are impoverished as well. How significant is it? Well, you're painting a sympathetic picture of dads who want to be involved, who are most excited about the child, and yet it doesn't turn out that way. But how significant is it?
Well, it doesn't turn out that way in part because the relationships weren't very stable in the first place. So the average time to first conception leading to a live birth is just 6 to 7 months. Most of the time, these couples aren't in what fathers would call a real relationship. They're kind of in a more casual relationship. And so getting it together, you know, sort of forming a relationship in the face of a non-marital birth, a surprise pregnancy, it actually proves really hard, especially when most of these men don't have the financial wherewithal to sort of support a family. So good intentions can still have tragic outcomes. I will say, though, that if you look at these dads representative data, we looked at the National Longitudinal Survey of Youth, over time, they do tend to stay very, very involved in fathering. The problem is that they have their children across many different partners. If you have your children across more than one partner, which most of these men do, it's very hard to stay involved with sort of both sets of children. So what we see is that men are specializing, being very involved with one set of children, but often leaving an older child behind. So we call this serial selective fathering, and of course what this means for dads is they feel good about having accomplished fathering, but yet, you know, the children are left on a father go round. They may have a stepfather that engages in their life for a while, but the stepfather relationship tends to be just as fragile as the mother father relationship. And there's no one, you know, to pay the college tuition when the kid reaches 18.
We're talking right now with researcher Catherine Eden of Johns Hopkins University about the role of mothers and fathers in low-income families. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Jean Purcell. We continue our conversation about poverty, parenting, and misconceptions about low-income mothers and fathers. Sociologist Catherine Eden is with us.
And you can join the conversations with your questions for our guests or your thoughts and experiences. If you were or are a low-income parent, what are some of the challenges? And what do you think about current public policy when it comes to poverty relief? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk@wpr.org. And Catherine, we were talking about some of the different ways that, you know, fathers did finally parent, the children that they wanted to have. Sometimes they focused it on one child. And I'm curious about what you think about the way that these fathers are treated by public policy, by the law.
Well, fathers are treated, I think, by society in general, these dads, right? Not middle-class dads who typically, get separated from their kids through divorce. But these dads, low-income dads, are treated as either paychecks or predators. A middle-class dad, when he divorces, when he's assigned a child support award, he gets visitation. In most states, this is not true for non-marital dads. They get assigned a child support order, and they have to hire a lawyer and go to court in order to get any visitation. So they often call this taxation without representation. They really want to be a part of their kids' lives. They want to help guide their kids. They feel that they can really play a role. And so in some ways, they really rail against this notion of being treated as paychecks. Public policy often treats them as predators. Do we give them visitation? Maybe they're dangerous. Maybe they won't sort of stick with the child. But I think the fault in our thinking there is that we're imagining that the alternative to keeping dad involved is a stable single mother. But instead, what that child will experience is a series of father figures, none of whom will stick with the child. So do we keep bio-dad involved? Do we help strengthen bio-dad's parenting skills? Do we help him learn to be the best dad he can, which he desperately wants to be? It's just, I used to study single mothers for years prior to studying these dads, and I had no sympathy, for these men until I finally talked with them. But it's really quite striking how much they want to engage in this role. And instead of putting kids on a father-go-round, my advice would be to support dad in being the best parent he can be to his own child.
We're going to go to the phones right now and talk to Chris in Milwaukee. And you can join as well. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Chris, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How are you doing?
Pretty good. What do you think about all this?
Oh, I think I'm happy that you started studying dad. I forgot your name. I apologize. I just tuned in. I was like, wow, this is the exact situation I'm in now. And like, the problem is I want to be a father. I want to be a family. But the mother, she's just, it's hard to explain, but she just doesn't want me involved at all. I'm trying to be a husband. Yes, I can. We had children before wedlock, but I found God, thankfully, and he definitely led me to becoming a better man, becoming a better father, and it's tough. And now I'm paying $1,140 a month in child support, getting $1,600 after taxes for me. I still take care of the kids, and I still spend money on the kids when I have them every weekend, except one when I'm on call working. And, it's tough. I just don't understand how society sees things. It boggles my mind. It really does. And unfortunately, I've been struggling with this for 9 months now, just like trying to make it work, and I just keep getting beat down. So, and there's fathers out there, a lot of fathers out there like that, and it's tough.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling, Chris, and sharing your experience and your thoughts. Appreciate that. And Catherine, what goes through your mind as you hear Chris?
Chris, thanks for calling. This is such a common story. Moms are often trying to do the best they can with regard to their kids. They're protective. But the fact of the matter is gatekeeping is real. And where we see gatekeeping, that's the mom keeping the dad away, is not only when dad can't afford to pay child support, which Chris is doing, But also when she enters into a new partnership, it turns out that it's, you know, hard to keep these new relationships together as parents are churning through partnerships. And, you know, when dad comes around to visit the kids and mom is trying to sort of forge a new family, there's often conflict. And so mom's often tempted, you know, to swap daddies. And in fact, moms often, you know, sort of over time attract better partners, at least in terms of their education and earnings. And so it can be really tempting to think, well, I was with this caterer who only worked half-time. He wasn't that great. Now I'm with a mechanic. Wouldn't that be a better dad for my kids? But what moms are failing to appreciate is that, you know, the caterer is going to stick with that kid if given the chance, and the electrician, once the relationship breaks up, is long gone.
Now, marriage is one piece of the puzzle here that we haven't talked too much about, and one thing you looked at was the ways that women decide to get married or not to get married. What factors do women in poverty weigh when they're deciding whether or not to get married?
Well, both moms and dads value marriage. You know, the typical person surveyed at the time of a child's birth, whether it's the mom or the dad, is planning to get married to the partner. You know, we sometimes joke based on our research that it's not that the poor think too little of marriage. It's almost as if they think too much of marriage. So marriage is held to a very high standard among the poor. To get married and risk divorce is a sacrilege. And in fact, a poor but happy marriage is in some ways a sacrilege because of the risk of marital dissolution. Poor folks generally say that marriage is sacred. It's a sacred bond. And they don't think their relationships, and remember, these relationships are forged quickly and almost accidentally, are really up to the demands of marriage. We find that over time, if couples gain economic stability and their relationship quality is high, there's a greater chance that they will transition to marriage. But it's certainly not as though the poor don't value marriage. Both moms and dads say they want to get married and believe marriage is the right place to marry their kids, but they don't want to marry foolishly. And in that way, I think they're reflecting the values of the middle class. It's just that they've already gone ahead and had the kids.
Catherine, based on what you saw and you experienced, what kind of public policies do you think actually work to help people get out of poverty and support the families that they have?
Well, you know, family is both a cause. Family structure changes are both a cause and a consequence of poverty, right? Part of the reason the poor don't marry is because they can't afford to. They can't live up to the cultural standard of marriage. You know, marriage in the larger culture is viewed, you know, as sort of the frosting, as our respondents say, the frosting on the cake of a working class respectability already achieved. Our families want a little piece of the American pie. They want the white picket fence. And they don't believe it's appropriate to get married until they have those things so they can make sure their marriage will survive. So as economic inequality is increased and the fate of low-wage workers is just, you know, it's so very difficult, you know, the poor folks' chances of achieving even a modest level of stability have really declined in serious ways. So, you know, making sure low-wage workers can earn a family wage is, of course, critical. But more than that, we believe, my co-author Timothy Nelson and I believe that what we really need is a societal change of heart about these men. Beyond seeing them as predators or mere paychecks, we need to recognize their value as parents. I live in Baltimore, and Johns Hopkins University has adopted an inner-city school. And in that school...
And we've got about 10 seconds. I'm sorry, just about out of time.
They invite fathers into every classroom. Fathers are on field trips. Fathers are on the emergency contact list. And it's just amazing how these dads are really engaging with their children and with their children's schools.
Catherine, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That was Catherine Eden, poverty researcher at Johns Hopkins University.